Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Division 5 of the Colorado Court of Appeals and the 230 docket. We have one matter on that 230 docket. I assume counsel at the council table are here on Kansgen. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Against St. Vrain School District. We've read the briefs. We're familiar with the facts. At least one of us has been in the record. So you may feel free to address directly your arguments. You have 15 minutes aside. The yellow light comes on when there are 5 minutes remaining for purposes of planning your rebuttal, if any. Please turn off any pagers or cell phones. And with that request, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Sonia McKenzie. I'm here on behalf of the St. Vrain School District. I think the facts in this case are laid forth pretty well in the briefs, and so I don't intend to spend any extensive time talking about those, although I may illuminate a little bit of the hearing testimony for the court. This is the second time that this case has been up on appeal before this court, as the court has probably figured out. Previously, in April of 2008, when this case was before this court, the court issued a mandate, which I'm sure the court was familiar with. But specifically, it instructed the trial court to make a determination on remand whether or not St. Vrain's bus driver Stewart's slapping of the minor Kansgen's hand to secure or unsecure the wheelchair was necessary to operate the school bus. And that is element number one of the four-part test that we set forth in our briefs to determine a waiver of immunity for the operation of the motor vehicle. This case presents a somewhat complex analysis of that particular waiver of immunity. If we were dealing with a simple bus accident here, this would be a much more simple process. So we went back to the trial court, and we had a second hearing in front of the trial court. We did not take any new testimony at that hearing. Merely, we heard arguments of counsel and discussions with the court. And so following that hearing, the court entered another order dated May 29th of 2008. The final conclusion of that order says, Stewart's actions of slapping Kansgen's hands away were necessary to complete her required job duties. It is the position of the St. Vrain School District that that finding did not comply with this court's prior instructions and did not analyze the issue of whether or not that conduct was necessary to operate the vehicle.
So are you asking us to send it back for another go-around?
I'd like to not have another go-around. I would like at this point for this court to make a determination. I think this is a matter of law. The court can make a de novo review and determine as a matter of law that this conduct did not arise out of the operation of a motor vehicle.
And do we give any deference to the trial court's determination on the second go-around?
I think you give deference to the court in terms of findings of fact. But as we cited in our reply brief, in terms of the determinations of the issues of law, this court has de novo review.
So is the operation of a motor vehicle a finding of fact or a question of law? I mean, I'll leave you to answer.
It might be a mixed question of fact and law, and I'm not sure that the case law is very specific on that. And in fact, I believe we cited on our reply brief that there is some authority that stands for the proposition that if it's a mixed question of fact or law, you should apply a de novo standard.
Can we infer from Judge Sandstead's order when he says that it is undisputed that the driver's securing and unsecuring of wheelchair passengers during loading and unloading of those passengers is a function of the bus driver's safe operation of the school bus, and then he finds that the driver's actions in slapping the hand were necessary to complete her required job duties, can we infer that that is a finding, or he has found that the bus driver's actions were a necessary element in the operation of the bus?
I don't believe that that's an appropriate inference to draw. And in fact, if that's what he wanted to find, this court's instructions in the prior mandate were very clear. He should have said that I find that it's necessary, her slapping the hands away was necessary to complete her job duties and necessary to the operation of a motor vehicle. And I think, and we've articulated this in our briefs, but there is a mingling, a commingling of the two different elements of this immunity. And the commingling is, was the activity of driving the bus and securing and unsecuring the wheelchair, is that within the course and scope of a bus driver's duties? Well, of course it is. But the secondary question is, does the particular action that gives rise to this underlying lawsuit, does that arise out of the operation of a motor vehicle? And it's been suggested in this case by the plaintiff's side that the mere fact that the slapping incident occurred during the securing and or unsecuring of the wheelchair necessarily means that it's a part of the operation. I submit it's a completely independent, it's a separate action, and therefore the court has to analyze that particular conduct separately and independently, similarly to the way that that conduct was analyzed but in the Valenzuela decision and also the other cases that we cited in our briefs.
Does it really matter whether the bus driver was slapping Mr. Kamsgen's hands in self-defense or for the purpose of moving his hands out of the way so she could proceed with securing or unsecuring the wheelchair?
I think that's a crucial analysis, and it's somewhat of a fine line and a question, but if her goal in slapping his hands away was, I need to get his hands away so I can secure the wheelchair, that's a different attitude from, I need to slap his hands away so he doesn't grab my breasts again. This was the third time this young man had attempted to grab this woman's breast, and she felt a compulsion to protect her body from him.
Indeed, her testimony is that's why she slapped his hands.
Exactly, and that's one of my frustrations about the trial court's decision, because it doesn't reference that testimony. It completely ignores and disregards that testimony. It also does not talk about...
Well, let me back up and
sure.
Ask you. The reason I ask that question is whether it really makes a difference. If I believe the testimony was also that Ms. Stewart testified that she really did not need to slap the young man's hands in order to secure or unsecure the wheelchair because she could have sought assistance from someone else.
Exactly, and in fact, that was the very step that she took when she was at the young man's house that morning to pick him up when he was being grabby. Simply, the bus aide came in and assisted her, and then she accomplished the task of securing and unsecuring the wheelchair. And she probably would have gotten to that point here, but the slapping incident occurred before that happened. And so she had assistance available to her. Once she arrived at the school, the bus aide was outside the bus. One of the paraprofessionals assigned to the special education department was outside the bus. There were other people there available to assist her. And the crux of the court's analysis needs to be the issue of, was the slapping necessary or essential to securing or unsecuring the wheelchair? I submit it was not. If you look at a simple dictionary definition from Merriam-Webster's of what's necessary, what it says is it's something that's required. It's something that's compulsory. That means that there's no other choice. Even counsel for the Kanskin family acknowledged in oral argument below that she had choices as to what she needed to do in order to accomplish the task of securing the wheelchair.
Two questions, Ms. McKenzie. It's McKenzie, right?
It is. You're correct.
Wouldn't the trial court also have to conclude or find or both that the act of defending oneself against unwanted advances or repeated unwanted advances is not in the course and scope of a person's employment?
I don't know. That's an excellent question, Your Honor, and I don't know if they would have to make that finding or not. That perhaps goes more to the liability issues than it does to the immunity issues. But frankly, One could, actually, I'm going to take that back. I would say in the special education arena, people that work with those students have to defend themselves all of the time. And it's not because these young men and women are intentionally trying to hurt folks, but they simply cannot control their behaviors. And so one of the things that all of these individuals that work with these kids in school are taught, they're taught restraint techniques. And all of those things are a part of defending oneself. And so I think arguably defending oneself could be within the course and scope of one's duties. But I will also tell you that the school district is not taking a position in this case that Ms. Stewart did anything that was outside the scope of her duties. They're very supportive of her.
Okay.
I want to talk briefly again about this separation between the assault versus the securing of the wheelchair. And specifically, I would suggest to the court that the assault is an activity that's occurring within the bus. If instead of this activity occurring on the bus, Ms. Stewart had been rolling Mr. Kansgen's wheelchair during the hallways of the school, and he attempted to grab her and she slapped his hands away, we would not be here. The only potential waiver that might apply there would be for a dangerous condition of a public building. And I don't think anyone sitting on this court in their right mind would think that a public employee slapping someone's hand away in a public building is a dangerous condition of a building. Moreover, there is a body of case law that relates to that particular waiver that says that activities include that occur in a building, including a shooting that happened at the Arapahoe County Courthouse, are not waivers of immunity, do not constitute dangerous conditions. And that is similar to the analysis that the United States District Court, Judge Kane, applied in the Valenzuela case. I would suggest that that case provides very persuasive authority in this case, and that this court should look at that opinion and consider it. And one of the reasons that we have appealed this case is because the court's order on remand did not address the Valenzuela case in any way, shape, or form. It also did not address the McMichael case, and it further did not address the other cases that we have cited in our briefs on this issue. And so the Stockwell decision is not addressed. The Kastner decision from the Colorado Supreme Court is not addressed, which the Kastner decision relates to a UMUIM PIP coverage question. But historically, because the CGIA did not include a definition of the term of operation of motor vehicle, courts have looked to bodies of law from other areas like PIP and like UMUIM in order to interpret that terminology. And the Kastner case involves a sexual assault that occurred in a vehicle. And it says that that does not arise out of the operation of a motor vehicle. Similarly, Valenzuela involves a sexual assault. I don't think the nature of the assault is determinative, whether it's a physical assault or a sexual assault. The fact of the matter is it's an independent activity occurring inside the bus. It is not integral or necessary or essential to the operation of the bus. And therefore, this court should find that there is no waiver of immunity and remand instructing the trial court to grant our motion to dismiss. Those are all the comments I have for now. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal unless you have any further questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie. You have 2 minutes and 11 seconds.
Please, the court and counsel, I'm Mike Jackson representing the appellee, Devin Kansgen. With me is Deborah Kansgen, who is Devin's mother. And Devin is disabled and really can't be here today, so she's representing him. A few comments about the dichotomy of the function of securing and unsecuring wheelchairs as being both part of a job description as well as part and parcel of the operation of a motor vehicle. First of all, when Judge Sandstead entered his order of December 4th, 2006, the original order in this case, he did, in fact, state that the conduct of the defendant Stewart, as alleged, falls within the operation of the motor vehicle. On remand and issuing his second opinion, as quoted by this court, He did state that it was undisputed that these acts of securing and unsecuring the wheelchair were a function of the safe of the driver's safe operation of the school bus, which is well supported by the Harris case, which is supported in my brief, which stands for the proposition that a bus driver's duty, operation of that bus, includes ensuring that passengers are safely boarded and safely disembark the bus. The fact that the Judge Sandstead, in the final findings of his most latest or his latest opinion, specifically addressed the job duties, it already found that those job duties were within the operation of the motor vehicle, and that there's not really a confusion or a commingling of the two elements, as there is a duality of nature of this particular act. They are both operator or within the scope of the employment of the duties of the bus driver, as well as part and parcel of the operation of the motor vehicle. The fact that the slapping in this case occurred while these functions were being performed provides us with a much closer and link and relationship between the operation of the motor vehicle dealing with the wheelchair and the injury or the act that occurred to the plaintiff. The cases that are cited by the appellant in this case are distinguishable. For example, in the McMichael case, the present case, there is a much more substantial relationship between the injury and the use of the vehicle than there was in the McMichael case. The fact that the bus driver was working with the wheelchair, securing and unsecuring part of the operation of the vehicle, and that at least one of the purposes or one of the functions of slapping of the hands was to remove his hands from the immediate vicinity so that the bus driver could finish with her operation of releasing or securing the wheelchair, ties it in with the operation of the motor vehicle.
But didn't she testify that she slapped his hands away because she didn't want him to grab her again?
That's correct, Your Honor. I also, in response to the questions that I put to her as to whether or not she could finish her job of unsecuring or securing the wheelchair while his hands were in the way, she admitted that she could not so finish the job with the hands in the way. She also stated that there were other options available to her to solve that problem, options which she didn't take. The argument of the appellant that because there were other options available, therefore slapping was not necessary, that's the argument that if there are choices available to you that are the right choices, that it's okay even if you make the wrong choice in accomplishing your task. In this particular instance, Janine Stewart found it necessary to use those means to accomplish her ends. She used the slapping the hands as her means to clear the deck so she could finish her job. Could have done something else, but actually chose. And because she made that choice, she found it necessary, and therefore this court, Judge Sandstead, found it to be a necessary part. And I think that decision should be upheld because it is supported by adequate and competent evidence, mostly of which is the actual testimony of Janine Stewart. Other cases that are involved in the case Stockwell, well, that's sort of the reverse of this case. Stockwell just had a number of passengers attacking another passenger, and the court held there that there's no waiver of immunity for actions that weren't taken by an employee, a public employee. Well, we are suing for actions taken by the public employee, so the Stockwell case is not really applicable in this case, and effectively it's just the opposite of what we're dealing with here.
Although the waiver here deals with the operation of a motor vehicle, that's what gives the immunity or takes away the immunity from the school district.
That's correct.
And as I understand the original opinion here that remanded the case, the query was whether or not this event had to do with the operation of the vehicle.
Correct.
And it doesn't appear, does it, that Judge Sandstead really addressed that issue?
I think he did, actually, Your Honor, with the The paragraph on the first page of his opinion where he stated that it was undisputed that securing and unsecuring the wheelchair is a function of the safe operation of the vehicle.
But she wasn't securing and unsecuring the wheelchair at the time she slapped his hand.
She was attempting to. She was...
That's not what she says.
She was undoing the brakes.
I agree that she answered a question put to her by you, that she couldn't perform a certain task with his hands in the way. But I think the testimony is fairly clear that what she said was she slapped his hands because she didn't want to get grabbed again. She didn't slap his hands because she wanted to tie down the wheelchair. And on that state of the record, we are again reviewing the decision of the trial court.
Your Honor, I have in my notes that Defendant Stewart admitted that she was undoing the brakes on Appellee's wheelchair in the process of making sure he safely and properly disembarked from the bus when she hit him. That was on page 50 of the transcript of the first hearing, page 50, line 22 to 51, line 1. Anyway, that was my recollection of the transcript of the testimony that was given by Jimmy Stewart, that she in fact was in the process when this happened and when she hit him.
Page 50, line 22.
I believe that's what, yes, Your Honor. Is that right?
Thank you.
I think on 20, line 25 says, now, question, now you were in the process of trying to undo his brakes so you could unload the wheelchair, correct? And her answer was correct. One other point along the same lines is, if we approach this situation from a little bit different angle, what if in the process of locking down his wheelchair, Devin Kansian had tried to grab the bus driver, and instead of going through with her duties, she had said, well, you're not going to grab me, and left him the way he was, that is, unsecured, and his wheelchair had rolled around and he'd gotten injured. I think that would be clearly a case of, well, at least negligence, or at least an intentional omission to do a job that was necessary to the operation of the vehicle and result in liability. And so there's a very fine distinction, I think, between something like that, an intentional omission to complete the job, versus an intentional act to get his hands out of the way so she could complete the job. Perhaps part of her motivation was to not get grabbed again, but part of her motivation was also to get rid of his hands so she completed her job. She didn't wait for the aide to come back on the bus to help her. She went ahead and accomplished it with the aid of the battery, of slapping him. The Kastner case cited by appellant looks for a foreseeable use of the vehicle and a link between the injury and the use of that vehicle. Well, it's very foreseeable that this bus will be transporting disabled students in wheelchairs. That's what it was built for, with a lift and rings in the floor to lock down the wheelchairs. It's foreseeable that the bus drivers will need to lock those wheelchairs down and to remove them. So she was engaged in totally foreseeable activities when all this happened. And the fact that she used one method to accomplish her accident that's caused injury, that was her choice. That was the decision she made, and that's whether it was negligence, whether it was an intentional tort, whether it was an omission, is all the same. It results in injury, and it's directly related and directly linked to a foreseeable use of that vehicle. In Valenzuela, that case is so different than this case, it's hard for me to relate the two. In Valenzuela, there was an allegation that sexual assaults took place in a patrol car, but virtually no real argument that the defendant police officer was actually engaged in any activities that were essential to the operation of a motor vehicle while all this happened. Well, just the opposite is true here, Your Honor. The bus driver was clearly engaged in activities relating to the operation of the vehicle when she slapped.
Mr. Jackson, here's the problem I'm having, trying to wrap my brain around the precise parsing I think we're engaged in here. The trial court's order says, in part, as follows, that number one, he recognizes there is a distinct situation where, he calls it a disparate situation, where the driver slaps the child's hands away in order to protect her own body from his pinches and grabs. I think he sees that as a far different thing than acting and performing duties in the course of securing and unsecuring a wheelchair. And I'm perhaps putting words in his mouth, but that's certainly what I discern from his written paragraph. He next says that the court finds Stewart's testimony regarding her slapping away of plaintiff's hands in order to allow her to undo the brakes and safely unload Kansken and his wheelchair from the bus is credible, and then concludes by a preponderance of the evidence that her actions in slapping his hands away were necessary to a completion of her required job duties. Isn't he missing a final sentence that, in accordance with the remand instructions, he needs to say that slapping away the child's hands were necessary to the operation of the bus?
Your Honor, I do see that the absence of such language. I recognize that. My argument is that the required job duties relates back also to the language on the first page stating that it's undisputed that the driver securing and unsecuring the wheelchair is a function of the safe operation of the school bus. And that discussing his findings there on the last page, that's discussing securing and unsecuring the wheelchair, which is not only a job duty, but also, according to his statement earlier on, part and parcel of the operation motor vehicle. The actual wording is not the ideal, but I think that the intent and the real thinking and his decision, I think, is clear by reading the decision as a whole. But yeah, you're correct in the fact that he did not add those specific words there in the last paragraph, but I think that it's cured by the language on the first page and the last paragraph of the first page.
Mr. Jackson, this is a close question, I think.
It is a very close question, John. Researched this particular issue and have come up with no other cases.
So my question is a broader one. Do we construe the waiver provisions deferentially in favor of the victim, or do we construe the waiver provisions of immunity narrowly in order to avoid imposing liability not specifically provided in the statute? And just so you know, I'm reading those two different sentences come from two different cases of this court.
I know which cases they come from, Your Honor. And I would argue the former, the Harris approach, deferential to the victim under the language and the reasoning that was contained in that case. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Just briefly, I think Judge Graham's point is well taken, and I want to note this on the record. Here's Ms. Stewart's testimony about her intent and her purpose in slapping the hands away. And this is on cross-examination by Mr. Jackson. This is not me feeding her lines of questions. and you chose to swat his hand away to try to get his hand out of there so you could unlock the brake? Answer, no. I chose to swat his hand away to keep him from grabbing me again. Question, and if he kept trying to grab you, you couldn't unlock the brake, right? Answer, I would have had to have someone else come and help me. Question, but you didn't do that. You swatted his hand away so you could unlock the brakes. Answer, I swatted his hand away so he wouldn't grab me again. She was very clear, very unequivocal about that testimony on cross-examination. And frankly, while the trial court found that Ms. Stewart's testimony was credible, it seemed to completely disregard that testimony. And I think the court needs to analyze whether or not that was clear error to disregard that testimony. Finally, in looking at the Valenzuela decision, one of the things that Judge Kane notes is the legislative history of this particular section, 2410-1061A. And one of the things that he points out is the legislative history suggests that the purpose of this waiver is for automobile accidents. Obviously, a bus is not an automobile, but for motor vehicle accidents. No one ever foresaw or perceived that an assault would occur on a bus and would be related to the operation of a bus. That's an inherent and distinct activity from securing and unsecuring a wheelchair. And so I would stand on those arguments, ask that this court reverse the trial court and find in favor of the school district. Thank you.
Shouldn't we construe the provisions liberally in favor of the victim, as Mr. Jackson suggests, or should we follow the older cases to construe the immunity narrowly, and why?
Of course, Your Honor, I would argue that they should be narrowly construed and you should follow that line of cases.
Why should we disregard Harris?
It's not a matter of disregarding Harris, it's the fact that we have a conflict of law on these topics, and the reality is that these waivers are very specific in terms of what they require and what they don't require, and so to give a really broad, expansive, goes far beyond the legislative intent. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie. Thank you, Mr. Jackson. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. That completes our docket for today, and the bailiff may announce a recess.
All rise. The court will be in recess, subject to call.